This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com. Episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 85. 85 episodes of the show. That is crazy talk.
And it's an odd numbered episode, so we have a guest. We actually have several.
We have a bunch of guests. I really love having guests on the show. Yes. It's super fun, and we're really looking forward to that. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra. And as you astutely mentioned, we have some guests on the show. We have welcomed onto the show this week not some people that are shilling a Kickstarter, but the hosts of actually the folks who run the website One Board Family. We have Rick White and Ryan and Aaron Gutowski on the line.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hello, hello. Actually, I am here to shill something. I have been meaning to talk to you about this can opener board game idea that I have that I want everybody to invest in. It's safe for none of the children, and it'll be great.
Nice.
Okay. You cannot certainly put that on Kickstarter. It must be on Indiegogo.
Yeah, it's obscure That's enough that it has to go on Indiegogo.
Yes, I'm, good. There's I'm no hoping choice. That it releases by 2027, so go ahead and get your funds in now.
Yes, you don't want to miss
Excellent.
Out.
Awesome, Excellent. Awesome. What's the video game one where if you put in money like a Kickstarter or something, you kind of invest in the product?
Oh man, I forget.
I don't remember
I
what it's called.
I forgot what that was.
I can't remember.
That,
I don't know.
Greenlight? Was that the No,
it's not Steam Greenlight. There's an actual investing thing, and somebody listening to this is screaming at the radio, but that's okay.
I like my video games like, when they're complete.
I want to say mint.com, but it's not mint.com. it's some short name like that. But anyway, so we wanted to have you guys on the show for a couple of reasons. So Ryan, you and I had a little friendly bet going.
Yes. Around football, every board
Patriots
gamer's favorite
and
sport.
Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, you know, it takes a special person to like football and board games.
Yes.
And you and I are those special. We're special people. All right.
Yeah.
So the Patriots beat the Jaguars, and then they played a terrible, I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway.
It was very sad. It was very sad because I was sitting there. I was like, why couldn't we have been that terrible in the Super Bowl? Why could we have not failed at the Super Bowl? Why not?
Well, we did the year before. So, I already knew that feeling, so it's fine.
Well, you got the, like, if there's anybody to feel bad for, it's probably you, Rick. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you would know because you're actually a Falcons fan, but you took a Boston quarterback.
Yeah.
Right? And he's leading the team. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's one of the epic postseason collapses.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
as a Georgia sports fan, it's kind of a lifestyle you become accustomed to. Like national championships, we like to lose. Atlanta Falcons like to lose Super Bowls. Braves have blown quite a few World Series. I mean, it's kind of just this continuous failure cycle to where I never get happy about anything. That way, I'm never disappointed when we lose inevitably.
Well, you guys still have that hockey team, the threat. Oh,
no,
never mind.
Stop. Go away.
I'm sorry. Well, if it's any consolation, I've been a Red Sox fan since before 2004. Yeah. So I understand the feeling.
Yeah, well, you can move on. We can talk about so many other things. Would you like to?
we're here to talk about board games.
Yeah, we're here to talk about board games. I think before we even get into our topic of the show, which we're going to talk about filler games today, which is
Yes.
Part of the bet thing and something that filler games are kind of super critical to, you know, successfully playing in a family because of attention spans and things like that. So I think it's going to be a really great topic to talk about on the show. We're going to do kind of like a top five filler games kind of thing.
Yeah.
But before that, all you guys, you can throw back and forth all you want to. Tell us about your website. Tell us about One Board Family. And I know you guys have a podcast. So talk about that. Tell our listeners what your side of the fence is like.
So One Board Family started out of, we'd had multiple conversations. Aaron and I had multiple conversations about what it would look like to spend time writing about board games and sharing this hobby, because what we found was a lot of times people were coming to us and they were saying, I really want to play board games. What do you recommend? What do you want? What should we play? What should we introduce our families to? And that was always the topic of conversation when we spent time with people. And so Aaron and I talked about it one night. It was actually some friends of ours, the Ennises, and they were sitting around the table with us and we were eating dinner, and they said, you know, you guys would really do good at that. Well, it was about 10 o'clock at night. And I said, Aaron, we've talked about it. Let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and created started the website, started branding it that night till like 2 a.m. Yeah. And then just went from there and, started releasing things about 3 weeks later. It's been June, almost 2 years ago. So, and it just comes from that passion of writing about board games and playing and introducing new people. I think the biggest thing for us is introducing people who aren't gamers to games that they're going to love. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing for us.
And that really kind of give their families good time to spend together, because families are really looking for that now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then Rick, why don't you tell us how you got involved?
I didn't even know I was here. Like, what am I doing? I have no... No, I'm just kidding. While I had seen Ryan, you know, we met several years ago, and I had seen him start to post these different board game blog posts, and I had been into more of the, I guess, obscure side of board games, the things that, I don't know, it feels like you walk through this door where you're like, what are all these, you know, different things that are happening in this board game world? And I had given him some input on some of the things, you know, that he was writing about, and eventually I did a review and kind of helped write some different pieces. And at first, Ryan had said, what about, like, can you help us do, like, once a month? And I was like, yeah, sure, once a month, I can pull that off. And then now it's, you know, all the time, and I love it, and it's been great to join in. And I, as I'm rolling as the fifth wheel over here tonight, I do not have any kids. It's my wife and I, but we have a lot of friends over that are our age to play games. And I think for me, a big part of it is having something to do instead of, you know, just watching TV together, or, you know, I don't know. It feels like board games really can get people talking, get people, you know, more comfortable more quickly with each other. And so it's been great to have the opportunity to learn about new games myself, but then of course pass on that knowledge to other people.
Yeah. Rick writes a lot from the perspective of gaming with your spouse. I think Rick and Sarah have a lot of perspective on what it's like to, live pretty busy lives with two jobs and a community around you and try to fit in gaming and try to make that a social activity that's bigger than themselves, you know? And so finding a gaming group in Atlanta can be tough. And so Rick writes from Atlanta and we're from Columbus, Georgia. And so we have different communities around us. And I think between the three of us writing, I think that we get a pretty large base, cover a pretty large base.
I think Rick, one of the things you said that was really, really sort of in touch with what it is that's so special about board gaming. you know, they say a lot that that men tend to bond together, working side by side, because they do active things, and women tend to bond facing each other, like sitting at a table. And I think that's kind of like a commentary towards the more interpersonal, like emotional connection that you have when you're having a conversation as opposed to physically building something. And we're men and we like to build and rah, rah, rah. But board gaming sort of forces
it kind of bridges that gap. That does both.
Yeah. I mean, you've got something that, in some ways, depending on how complicated the game is, it has a lot of those things that kind of tick boxes for men, right? I'm speaking broad stroke generalities here, of course. But there's absolutely a social construct around board gaming. And so whether it's in the family or whether it's, you know, with a bunch of adults or just a bunch of kids sitting around a table, that interpersonal interaction is such a critical part of the board game experience, and it's just a really great way to spend time with other people that isn't sort of checking out and everybody's looking at a screen. Even if you're playing a video games together, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's still looking at a screen as opposed to sitting around a table and everybody facing each other and having the conversation flow across the table.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I like that perspective a lot.
Yeah. For me, I think we were looking at our top five lists as we ended our first season of our podcast. And one thing I noticed was how many cooperative games showed up on my list. And I think, growing up, I had a lot of bad experiences, I guess, not growing up, maybe I could say like in college where we would play games and stuff and you'd have the uber competitive person that kind of ruins the experience for everybody. When I play games, I want everybody to have a good time. And so I think, cooperative games have really snuck up my list as it's, especially for getting people that I haven't played games with before, kind of comfortable not having them. I'm generally pretty good at board games because I play them so much. So I don't want to like obliterate a person the first time that I play games with them. And so having like a cooperative thing, I think, really sets us up for that. And so, yes, like you said, being able to grow and develop friendships, develop, camaraderie and stuff like that. I think board games have done a great job of that as we've been kind of board game centric these past few years.
Yeah, we talk a lot about cooperative games on our show and how cooperative games are especially super awesome when you have kids because they are not at the same level as you usually. And Rick, that's something you kind of touched on. The only thing that we've had to be careful about is quarterbacking, right? So you don't want to be the player who's most adept at min-maxing a game. You don't want to make everybody's decisions for them, kind of thing. Which it's a difficult line to draw sometimes with when you're playing with kids, right? Trying to teach them strategy and these kinds of things, and we talk about that a lot. Versus at least just playing.
I think that a game like Forbidden Island, we played a lot of that a couple years ago with some friends, and we found the ones that were quarterbacking all the time and would sit there and say, oh, we'll do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And it became tough to play those games with people like that.
It just becomes a miserable experience when someone is basically playing the game on their own and everyone's just sitting at the table following directions.
Yeah. It's almost having an overbearing project manager. And then you're sitting there and you're saying, why are we playing this again? And so I think that brought attention to Aaron and I about making sure we don't do that for the kids. Instead, asking them questions instead of telling them what to do or where to go or what card to pick up.
Yeah,
I think sometimes with kids, you can do a little bit of telling as long as you explain the whys.
Yeah.
If they're learning strategy, if they don't, I think of a game like Castle Panic, where you can say, clearly show them, on the next turn, see how the monsters are going to come in. So if I give you this card, you'll be able to do cool stuff. And then they get excited about doing the cool stuff. And that kind of gets those synapses, connecting in their brain to figure out how strategy goes. But I agree with you. Getting them to answer the questions on their own is definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
So we kind of touched on it very briefly. Our listeners know that we have three kids, and now we know that Rick doesn't have kids. But Ryan, you and Aaron have some kids. So tell us about your family situation.
Yeah, we have three kids as well. Our oldest is a teenager. She's 14. And we have one that's about to be 13. And then we have a 10-year-old. So we've been gaming with them for years now. So they've basically grown up gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they're at very different levels because some of these filler games we're going to talk about tonight, actually, our oldest daughter likes, but it's because of the quickness and because of the ease of learning and teaching that she enjoys them so much. Mm-hmm. Whereas sure. something that's an hour long or two, I've made the mistake of purchasing Dungeon Pets for the girls because I thought, man, Dungeon Pets, you're taking care of this pet and you're cleaning up after it.
And the artwork was artwork that they love. And yes. he just really thought that they would be drawn into it and want to play it. But we didn't really know what all the game entailed when we bought it.
Yeah, we purchased it. And then as soon as I'm like busting into the game, looking at everything, I got it used. But I start looking up, I said, well, this book's pretty heavy. Maybe there's some online like tutorials. Oh, they're all an hour and a half long. Why is that? Oh, because it's a heavy European game. And you need to sit there for 3 hours and play it. I was like, this will never hit the table.
But it was spelled with a Z. It was spelled with a Z.
Yeah. It's kind of funny to see their personalities emerge with games as they get older because our mm-hmm. oldest one, her attention span for gaming is not very long. So if we really want her to play with us, we have to find games that sort of cater to that. Whereas our youngest, who just turned 10, the first time that she played Catan with us, what was that?
Destroyed
4
us.
Years ago yeah. or so. It was her first time playing, and she absolutely destroyed us. Yeah. And we were playing the best that we could. And she loves it. She loves strategy. She's very competitive. So it's funny to see their personalities emerge and see what they like and what they don't like.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think ours are a little too young for us to get wrecked at games. But Have any of you played Gruff from Studio Woe?
I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
No.
So we talked about it on our last show. I kind of basically call it like Magic the Gathering crossed with Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, nice.
You should take a look at it. But it's a much more strategic two-player combat game where you're controlling these descendants of the Billy Goats Gruff and whatever. And I sat down to play it with, I think she was 7?
I think she was 7 the first
time. Or maybe just barely 8. This is not a game that I thought that she would like at all. But she thought the pictures looked cool. So I was like, sure, let's do this. You can read. And she really surprised me. She loved it. Loved it.
Cool.
So you really never know with stuff like that, well, right?
And speaking of destroying people, it all depends on the skill set. There's a game, Chicken Cha-Cha-Cha, that we've talked about that it's primarily a memory game, but there's a little bit of strategy with it. And our middle child, who just turned 7, he destroys us at it every time. Anyone else in the family, doesn't matter who he's playing against, he wins.
Well, because he doesn't have to keep like bills and stuff in his brain, right? So I got to think about work really stuff. Like he's got nothing in there yet.
That's funny.
I mean, we played the standard, you know, lay cards out memory, and he was beating me at that when he was 4. So, it's definitely just something that he's more skilled at.
Yeah, definitely.
How do we turn that into a marketable skill? What part of Vegas can we use Chicken Cha-Cha-Cha on?
I know.
We'll figure something out. It'll be awesome.
Well, means he has very good spatial memory, honestly. So he knows exactly where things are as long as nobody else moves them on him.
Yeah.
So in theory, that could work into better, like, sports playing skills if he knew where his hands and feet were.
How about counting cards?
There we go.
He might be able to
count cards. Send him into the casino.
Yes, exactly.
Mom and dad.
All right. Why is this child in here?
Well, before we get into our topic of the show, which is filler games, we're talking about, you know, different kinds of games and insight into personalities. I'll put us all on the spot on this one. Okay. What is everyone's absolute favorite board game? I mean, not filler, just of all time, favorite board game across any genre, anything.
Should I go first?
Is that the only fair thing? Okay. Oh, you got it. Okay, good.
You got it, Rick?
You can go first. Got it.
I'm going to go with Dead of Winter for a couple reasons. I think that you have such different experiences every time you play that game, and the communal aspect of that game is something that's just so in tune with my personality. Sitting around a table, trying to figure out what's going on, the best way to take care of the community, and then also make sure that nobody is going to betray us. And so that really clicks with me. And so when I think of a game that I will, if somebody said, hey, let's play Dead of Winter, I will put down whatever I'm doing and play Dead of Winter every time.
Cool. Hmm. So are you laughing at me?
Because now I see what you wrote down.
Okay. So what I'm going to list as my favorite game is Lords of Waterdeep. And the reason why is I don't necessarily think it's the best game ever, but it's a well-themed entry-level worker placement game. Like, I love game like Zolkin. I love that game. I love, love, love that game. I like Twilight Struggle. I like Seasons. But the problem is that those games are so, there's so many pieces and they're very fiddly that it's really hard for me to get them to the table because nobody wants to play with me.
Yeah, no.
but I can explain Lords of Waterdeep in basically 10 minutes and play it with almost anyone. And because it's an entry-level worker placement game, lots of people will play it with me. So, I'm going to go with Lords of Waterdeep with both expansions because I think that the corruption mechanic that Scoundrels of Skullport adds is an excellent addition to the game, and I will never play without it. So,
yep, great.
Lords
great
of Waterdeep for me.
All right.
True confessions of a board gamer. I've never played that game.
Really?
I know, right? It's terrible. mine would probably be Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. I love it. It's probably, can you call it a board game if it doesn't have a board? I live my life. just the immersive, the immersive element of it, the ability to really put yourself into this scenario. It's almost video game like. You feel like you're really doing a deduction. You're really in a case. I love that. And it's definitely my favorite.
Cool. Awesome.
Rick and Sarah have talked about that game in such a way that I've wanted it for about a year now because they make it sound awesome. I think my favorite would have to be The Bloody Inn, and there are several reasons why. When I really kind of got into board gaming, Ryan would always kind of find the games and say, hey, I think we should play this or I think we should play that. Well, The Bloody Inn is the first game that I was really attracted to, and I loved the artwork, and I said, hey, let's try this out. And so we bought it on our way out of town for vacation, and we spent the week playing that game, and I just love the different components of it. I love how you can change your strategy every time, how you're trying to do several different things at one time. And it's not that hard to learn. So that would be my game.
Cool.
Neat. So I am definitely going to have the lightest game on this list as my favorite. I do like some heavier games, but if you just, told me to pick one game to try to convince everybody else to play, it would be Bring Your Own Book.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I have always been a huge reader. And so it combines two of my loves, reading and board games.
It's almost a problem. I mean, if it wasn't a healthy thing to read, it would be a problem.
That's funny.
But it's, for anyone who hasn't played it, it's a party game similar to like an apples to apples style, except instead of having cards that are your answers that you're throwing out there, instead the judge, picks out a prompt from the pile, and then you all look in the books that you brought with you. So it has been hilarious that we've tried tons of different kinds of books and sometimes get just ridiculous quotes that, we're shoehorning them in to make them fit the topic.
I bring the stupidest books to this game on purpose.
Were you the ones that talked about bringing the memoir? Who was it? Arnold Schwarzenegger's memoar about
that was totally. Yep, that was absolutely me. Yep,
that was you. Okay, I just want to make sure I had the right podcast.
Yep, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Guide to Modern Bodybuilding.
There we go. Yep.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. We've also done a cookbook.
Computer programming textbooks.
Oh, my goodness.
The most time we played it, we pulled in our daughter along with several adults, and she brought this...
Like one of these, the Disney Descendants,
yeah.
Right? The kids of the people that we know.
Oh, my goodness. Disney it was teen awful. Junk.
So I will say, by the way, that computer programming textbook had some choice lines in it, right?
Yeah.
Things like, what's the first thing that you say after you've been broken up with? Like, you know, abort, retry, error, you know, things like that. Like they really work out.
Nice.
So... All right, so let's see. So we're going to talk filler games today. We've got lots of games on our lists. There are five people here, and I think we all have five games on each of our lists. So how do we want to do this?
I think what we did was the three of us have combined. We're trying something interesting this season of the podcast. Rick and I primarily, but we're each time we bring a top five list, we're actually trying to merge our top five, which is interesting because the very first episode of season two of the One Board podcast, Rick has a ridiculous entry in there, but I had to be okay with it because I picked two of the other entries.
Listen, this judgment of things that you haven't played yet is something that I think we need to work on, Ryan. Okay. Just because Bob Ross is featured on the cover of the box.
Hey, I own that game. That game is awesome.
Well, it's apparently amazing. It was one of the best games of 2017, according to Rick.
You're darn freaking right it is.
I don't know if I would go that far.
Well, yes. Rick got his say in the entry, so whatever. Yeah.
it doesn't help that all of my game purchases are from games that are like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm like that guy that like all of my television takes place through Netflix and I want people to talk to me about old shows. It's like, guys, did you see that episode of Frasier that I just watched last night that's like 20 years old? Can we please talk about it? Because I need
to. Yeah, yeah.
So like Rick's favorite band is the Rembrandts and...
Yes,
yes. Have you gotten their latest
Very
album?
True. Yes. I don't know if you guys have seen Saturday Night Fever, but that junk is amazing.
It's good stuff, man. Relevant topics. So I think...
Yes, this brings all the children to our podcast when we talk about Saturday Night Fever and Frasier.
Yeah. So I think we have condensed the three of us have submitted entries for our top five. So we have a collective top five.
Okay, so you have a... Okay. So why don't we get right into this? So you guys have your top five list, and we did ours separately, so we're going to have separate top five lists, but that's okay. So that's three lists to go around. There's some overlap because, you know, we play games together. So I will go first with my number five game. We'll start from the bottom and work our way up. My number five game is also on Anitra's list, and that is Quingo from Game Right Games. Have you played Quingo?
I have not. I have not heard
Quingo.
Of this.
Okay.
Please spell it.
Q-W-I-N-G-O.
Use it in a sentence.
Okay, so this is kind of... Yeah. Have you played Quingo?
After the king left, the Quingo.
Yeah. So it's basically, it's a cross between the game Quix, which is a game that they licensed to publish a while ago, and it's been internationally published for a while, and Bingo. And the game is very simple. It has one six-sided die with obviously six different faces on it. One of the faces is a wild. And you have each person has a piece of paper with five columns. And what you do to start, so there's five columns and there's 15 numbers in each column, 15 like spots
Something
for numbers
like
in each
that.
Column.
12, 15.
Yeah. And at the beginning of the game, you take the numbers 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, and 100, and you put them in one of the columns, or I guess it's just 10 through 50.
I think
50?
It's just 10 through 50.
10 through 50. And you put 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 in one of each of the columns. But the trick to the game is... as numbers, so you're going to be calling out a number and then rolling the die. And as numbers kind of slot in, you have to put them in order. Okay. So you wouldn't, you know, if you were putting in 50, you wouldn't put it at the very, very top, because then you'd, anything from 1 to 49, you wouldn't be able to ever put on that column. And so it's a really great game to bring to like a restaurant or something like that, because there's only one piece that's really moving around, and that's the die.
Yeah, yeah.
The box comes with sharpened pencils and the pad of paper with all the stuff on it. If you've ever seen, Game Right has, it's a defined like box type, right?
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's probably, I don't know, 4 inches by 5 inches or so, something like that.
Yeah.
It's got a flap at the top. A lot of Game Right's games are in the same form factor.
A lot of their dice games.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like $10, $15 or something like that. And it's very difficult to lose the pieces,
yeah.
And anybody can play, right? You only need to know numbers. There's no words at all. So, you know, our 5-year-old, well, he's not 5 anymore. He's 7 now,
he's 7.
He was 5 when we got it. Was able to play the game. So that's Quingo from Game Right.
Nice.
From Game Right.
From Game Right.
Yeah.
All right, so Rick, you want to give us our number 5?
Are we starting at the bottom or starting at the top?
Well, I put numbers. So.
Oh, I just now see the numbers. I don't know number 5 all that well, so I give it to you.
So our number 5 is Fuji Flush, and it makes it on this list for a couple of reasons. Fuji Flush is essentially an Uno killer for us, I think. It feels a little bit like Uno. It's made by Freeman Freeze, and it is a card. You're given 5 or 6 cards depending on the player count. And what I love about this game is it plays up to 8 players, mm-hmm. which is really cool. So it becomes a little bit of a party game at times, but it's not very good at lower player counts, like 3 players. So you've got these cards that are number 2 to 20, and at the very low end, you've got 2s, which are numerous. You've got a ton of 2s in the deck, and then you've got a 20, which there's 120, 119, 118. Essentially, you're going around the table. Somebody is going to play a card, and then the player to the right or left, I'm trying to remember, goes clockwise, left. Player to your left plays another card. If their card is a higher value than your card, it wipes your card off the table. What's so cool about this game is that you can actually team up. So if 2 people lay down 4s, they actually team up and their total is 8. And so that 8 is on the table, and now somebody has to beat that 8 with a 9. If you leave your card, if your card stays on the table one rotation around, you actually get to discard the card permanently, and now you're 1 card lower. You're trying to basically get all the cards out of your hand before any other players at the table. So it's kind of become an Uno killer in our home, and it's a game that our oldest daughter, who's 14, this is the game that she's like, hey, Fuji Flush, let's play Fuji Flush. She's very, very into it. It's something that comes with us to restaurants and on vacation all the time.
Nice. That's awesome.
Nice. My number 5 would actually be the same as yours. It's Quingo.
Ah, there you go.
Look at that.
Well, we don't need to explain that game because everybody knows it already. So why don't you go with your number 4?
Okay, so I'll move up to number 4. Number 4, I debated a little bit before including this because it's in a much larger box, so it doesn't scream filler game. but it's called Pyramix, which is another game from Game Right, funny enough. Pyramix looks like it's a dice game, but it's actually not. All of the cubes they're dice-sized, but they're the same on every face. So cubes are different from each other, but you're not rolling them because there'd be no point. The cubes all stack up in a pyramid shape.
There's a base, so they're actually all standing. They stack up diagonally, so they actually come to a point. It's not like a mahjong kind of pyramid.
Okay.
It's a true pyramid because it's got a staggered base. And so there's a couple rules about on your turn, you take 1 cube out at a time. They come in 3 different point values and 4 different colors. And there's a few rules about which kind of cubes you can and can't take. And that's basically it. That's the game. Like, you keep going until you get down to the bottom layer. You can either take stuff off the top or you can take stuff out from the edges so that pieces above them fall down. And once you're down to there's only dice on the bottom, not dice, cubes. There's only cubes on the bottom and not anywhere else. Then the game is over and you do final scoring. So it's incredibly simple to learn. Our 3.5-year-old gets how to play it. He doesn't understand the strategy involved at all, but he can play it.
Yeah.
And it's...
In a very similar way to something like Potion Explosion, he likes watching the cubes slide down when he pulls something out of the bottom and stuff like that.
He even knows, like, that the little... the eye is worth more than the bird, which is worth more than the ock.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So it's using a lot of symbols then.
So
it's all symbols.
Okay.
It's all symbols. Cool. Yeah, it's Egyptian themed. I mean, pyramid. So yeah, it's sort of the Egyptian sort of eye symbol. It's some kind of bird. I don't remember now.
Some Egyptian looking bird.
Yeah. Well, and then there's an ankh, and then there's a couple of cobra dice, and the cobra dice are basically just in there to get in your way and mess you up.
Yep.
And they're not worth anything.
Yep.
Cool.
So that's Pyramix. Yeah. So,
but it's nice, plays in, I don't know, 20 minutes or less. So, yeah. One of my favorites.
You guys want to go next, or shall I go next?
Yeah, Rick, you want to talk about number 4?
Sure, I gotcha. So, my number our number 4 would be Ink and Gold, which I believe Diamant, I don't know how to say that, is kind of what they've called it on Board Game Geek now, because it's essentially the same game.
Yeah.
But Ink and Gold, you may be pushing the limits of what you would call a filler, because it's because it kind of lasts a little bit on the longer side, but it's basically your treasure hunters going into a temple, and inside the temple there's treasure, and then there are dangers, and every round there are 5 rounds, and you keep going, and by turning over cards from a deck, so the deck could either have a certain amount of money that will split among all the people that are there, or it has a danger. And if you ever get 2 of the same danger, everybody that's still going is out and loses any money that they may have made that round. So it's kind of it's all pressure luck. The only thing you've got to decide is, do I keep going or do I not? So not a whole lot of decision making there. But, you know, in cases where you split up the treasure and it's not equally split, you leave some. And so if you retreat, you get to pick up that treasure on the way out. And so there's a few little wrinkles to the game, but it's really easy to teach. It has some cool components, like it comes with these little nicely folded tents where you kind of hide the treasure that you've collected over the game so nobody else knows how much you have. So it's kind of a nice, quick game. I've had it in my collection for probably 3 or 4 years now, and we still break it out from time to time, especially with family members, and we really like that one.
Cool.
Sure.
My number 4 game is a game from, I think, Strawberry Studio is the name of the studio, called What's Up. This is a game that, so they put Strawberry Ninja out on Kickstarter, and that one caught my eye, and so I kickstarted that, but then in their, in the different tiers, you could kickstart at higher levels and get one of their other games as well, and so I thought this game, What's Up, looked kind of neat, so I went ahead and got that. What's Up is...
we ended up liking it a lot.
Yeah, we actually like it way more than Strawberry Ninja.
Nice.
It's a set collection / memory game. Okay, so the way the game starts, what you're doing is you're collecting sets of birds. And so the way the game starts is you set up a grid. I don't remember. It's like really a 10 cute. By 10 grid or something
it's
like
as
that.
As if all the birds are sitting on power lines.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there are different color birds, and then there's also either 1, 2, or 3 birds
on each card.
The card. And so the way the game works, you set up this grid, is... you pick a card, you flip that card over, and I think you have to go in sequential order, right? You have to go 1, yes. And then 2, and then 3.
Yeah.
And you're trying to collect sets, and I think the first player who has 3 sets of the same color bird...
The number of sets you need...
It depends on the number of players. But, so the first player who has X number of sets of the same color bird... wins. And the thing that's interesting about this is that when you flip a card over, the birds on the other side, which is the side that you get to use, are either the same color or the same count as the backside. as what you can see. And so you, it's not, the thing about a memory game is if all of the backs are the same, you can kind of remember where certain pieces are because you don't have something distracting you. With this game, the stuff that's on the backs of all the, I mean, it's a different thing on the back of every single one of them.
You're able to use either side of the card, but you have to, you know, make sure that
it gets to you with the side that you want face down. So it becomes strategic because if you know what somebody wants and you see it there, you see it face up, that's a card you definitely don't want to use, right? You don't, even if you might need what's on the other side, you don't want to flip it over because if you're wrong, then that person, then your opponent can flip that card over and then take it, right? Okay. So it's a it's super easy to understand. It's a very visual game. Even if you don't really get strategy, you can play it. So we could play it with our three-year-old.
Again, yeah.
And it packs super small, so it's great for travel and stuff like that. So that is What's Up from Strawberry Studio.
So it can vary from being just kind of a nice pastime sort of game to being a little bit more cutthroat if you really want to be.
That was a game. I really liked the nice artwork on the front of the box. I think it was birds, and it was like a telephone line or something like that across the front.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Cute little cartoony birds.
Yeah, I really recommend it. And I bet you it can't be too expensive. So
yeah, definitely. That's cool.
It's good. So let's see. So are we up to number three? We're up to number three.
Number three.
Number three.
All right, I guess that makes it my turn again.
Okay, go ahead.
So my number three would be Stroop, mostly because I like watching people's brains melt.
You guys are like keep loading me up with things that are difficult to spell. How am I supposed to Google these while we're podcasting if you keep saying these hard words?
So Stroop, this one is a real word though, which helps. Stroop.
Gotcha.
It's named after the Stroop effect, which is the feeling of cognitive dissonance you get when you see a word that is portrayed in a way that doesn't match with the meaning of the word. So, for example, if I write the word black in blue ink, then you say, you know, what color is that? Well, it says black, but it's actually blue. So the game Stroop is completely built around this. You are going around, it's a speed kind of game. And you are trying to match cards from your hand into the center. A little bit like a spit kind of game, I guess. You're not taking turns. You're all trying to do it simultaneously. But the first round of the game, you're trying to put down a card that is described by the word in the middle. And then the second round, if that didn't break your head enough, the second round, you reverse it. And so now you're trying to put down a card that describes the card currently in the middle.
So the cards
shifting. Yeah.
Yeah. So the two rounds, they go back and forth. So the cards can either be outlines, which is hollow, or solid.
Hollow or solid.
They can be all caps, which is big, or all lowercase, which is small.
Yeah. Big and little.
They
give numbers.
There's numbers for the number of letters.
Yep. 3, 4, 5, 6.
And then there's obviously the colors.
Yeah.
Interesting. So depending on how you think and the way that you associate these things depends on what cards you're going to end up playing.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it can. So the way you're supposed to play the game is that you have your deck face down and you draw cards one at a time. And so as you start to match things up, you might just put them down as soon as you get anything.
Okay.
The funny thing about this game, and this always drives people crazy, is that this happens to me, and I think I saw it happen to some other people, where all of the sudden you have this like savant-like run where you just start slamming cards down like five in a row.
After another.
Because as soon as you put something down, the card that everybody
you
was looking at is different. And so everybody has to kind of recalibrate to whatever that other card is, and because of the Stroop effect, it takes a couple of extra seconds. So it's hilarious and it's annoying
it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
But not so frustrating that you want to just like throw the cards down and walk away. It's frustrating enough that you're like, no, I can get this. I can do it.
It's kind of like, you remember back when the Nintendo DS first came out and you had Brain Age and everybody thought they were all getting smarter. It's kind of like that if you wanted your grandma to be really angry at you. Like, that's what it sounds like.
Exactly. And so we're breaking the mold a little bit. This one is not a Gamerite game. It's
Grand Gamers Guild.
Yeah. So our number three is Mario Level Up. This was a game that actually our youngest one has played, but Aaron and I have not played. We just know that it looks super awesome on the table. So Rick's going to take this one.
Yeah. Mario Level Up is based on another game called King Me, which came out a while back. And I actually played this at a board game meetup. And loved it, but it was out of print, so I couldn't find anywhere. Finally got my hands on it at a little convention flea market thing, and I really like it. And the Super Mario Level Up came out, I believe, last year, and is, the as far as I can tell, the exact same game. It just has Mario characters instead of random little other characters. But you have a collection of people represented by little cardboard tiles, and they are all striving to be the king of the empire or the realm. And so you place them on this board that's just got 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, I believe is how it's laid out. And so on your turn, you just move a person from one level to the next level up. And you are trying to get somebody. Eventually, one person will get up to the king's slot, and you all vote. And in your hand, you have, I believe it's three no cards and then a yes card. So you can vote no on a king up to three times. If one person votes no, that person loses, or that candidate is gone and is out of the game. And you kind of, whether or not you want to vote for them is based on these cards that you'll get at the beginning of a round that have a list of six people, and those six people, the level that they end the game on is how many points that you will get at the end of that round. And so there's a little bit of strategy of you're trying to get your people to move up, but don't make it too obvious, because then somebody will throw them up for a vote and then vote them down, so you get 0 points for them. But you have to time it right to where you might want a no vote, but you also might want to save your cards. It's been really fun. We end up with some games where people all save their no votes, and then the very first election goes through and we're like, no, we didn't want that to happen. And so we have some pretty solid experiences with that game. I really like that one.
Yeah, we actually got that game in for review, so I am glad to hear that you really like it. That's encouraging.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome. I like it a lot.
I guess that leaves it to me, huh? My number two game is a game called Duple from...
Did you say your number three?
Anomia Press.
No, did you give me?
I'm sorry, my number three game. I was looking at the wrong number. My number three game is
like,
a game.
Did I miss?
I said the right game, but I just said the wrong number. is a game called Duple from Anomia Press. Duple is a game that we talk about on our show a lot.
All the time.
We don't so much play it as a filler, although it would definitely fit that category. We usually play it as a palate cleanser at the end of the night, because this game is hilarious at 2 in the morning, let me tell you.
Nice.
So the way the game works is it's a common deck of cards, and the cards all have a letter and a symbol on them. And so what you do is you flip the top of the deck in front of you, and now you have a symbol and a letter, and you look around the table, and if anybody else has a card that matches your symbol, the two of you are racing to come up with a word that contains both of those letters that is at least 5 characters long.
And fits whatever category has been previously pulled.
So, yeah, so there's category cards that are just mixed in with the deck, and so if you get to a category card, you just flip it over and it replaces the old category. And then you flip a card for yourself. And there's also wilds, so you know, two different symbols occasionally are considered matches. But it's just kind of like it's another one of these games where sometimes people will go on runs where they'll just suddenly they'll come up with the right word every single time, and
all of a sudden
it gets
your
little
brain kicks in gear.
Yeah. But there's nothing to it, right? It's not really a game you can play with kids so much because they just don't have the vocabulary to bring to bear. But it's one of these games that I really love because it is so easy to explain how the game works. You just you spend 5 minutes showing it to people, and you don't have to be a board gamer to say like, oh, I'll give that game a shot, right? Because it's almost more about the social experience than the game itself. So that is Duple from Anomia Press. That's my number three game. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my number two, and my number two game is Anitra's number one game.
It is.
So I've now done my number two, and I will defer to everyone else. Anitra, why don't you do your number two?
All right. My number two game is Batman the Animated Series, the dice game, which we call Batman Dice. We already loved Zombie Dice from Steve Jackson Games, and then Batman Dice gives it a theme that we're a lot happier with. So,
well, I mean, we're DC nerds anyway, so.
Well, you know you're a DC nerd when your little toddler crawls up to you and like, Mommy, Mommy, watch Batman? It's like 2 years ago, and I was just like, how do I say no to that?
That right there is good raisin.
So, yeah, love Batman Dice. It's a really simple press your luck game. You are one of the Batman villains, and the idea is that you're trying to rob a bank or something, and get away with bags of loot before Batman can catch you. So you're trying to roll bags of loot. You're trying not to roll Batman symbols, and if you roll any alarm bells, you have to set those aside and roll them again your next turn.
Yeah. It's pretty close to a straight retheming of Zombie Dice, but each of the villains has some kind of special ability.
Some special power.
With Mr. Freeze, if you roll blue Batman symbols, they don't count, and stuff like that. Everyone has a slight different power. So.
Yeah, Aaron bought that for me for Christmas, I think, over a year ago, and that was a game that I was like, it's exactly the same, it'll just be a different thing. But then the villain effects really, really do a little bit to change it, and it feels really good. I think they did a good job with these villain effects, kind of like nobody's really running away with the game, but if you use it at the right time, if your villain effect kicks in, you're going to be able to do some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we've really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Been fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
And also Batman.
Also Batman.
Absolutely, of course. Duh.
Batman everywhere.
Not only Batman, but like the best version of Batman, the animated series Batman.
Yes. So our number two, Aaron, you got that one?
Yeah. Our number two is Sushi Go. We love to play Sushi Go. We introduced the kids to it a few years ago, and we've actually introduced a lot of our friends to it. And as soon as we've introduced it to them, they've gone out and bought a copy. So it's just a fast-paced game where it's just you pick a card and you pass to the player on your right, and you just continue to do that, and you're building sets for points. And so I like this game a lot because every time you play, it can look different. And one time you could choose to collect dumplings, and the other time you could choose to collect just different sets. So it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy Sushi Go.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to put Sushi Go Party on there, but I feel like Sushi Go is much more of the filler game. You know, this is when I think of filler games, I think of something you can throw in a bag, take it with you, play it during lunch, play it at dinner. It's funny because we've gotten to Mexican restaurants and played Sushi Go at the Mexican restaurant while we waited on food. So.
We actually do that often with different games. And
yeah, there's a couple small box games that make it into Aaron's purse when we leave the house. So Sushi Go, you can tell that our copy of Sushi Go is nicely broken in. So as the cards are going to eventually fall apart.
Oh, yeah.
That's fair. I like the flexibility of Sushi Go Party, but it's a much bigger box and it treats itself like a longer game. So
with the modules of it too, I think you end up having to explain a little bit more than you do in just regular Sushi Go. I will say that I brought out Sushi Go Party. I think we played the standard Sushi Go deck anyway, but I did it at a we had a break at school. I don't remember exactly what for, but four girls that I teach all came and we played around, and like three of them went out and bought Sushi Go like that day. They're like, what is this? This game is not Uno. What is happening? I was like, yeah, it's pretty fun. And so they all went and bought copies and made their families play with them that weekend. I was like, yeah, there we go. Mission nice. Accomplished.
Yeah, no, the drafting part of it really confuses people at first. Like, what do you mean? I'm taking one and then passing my hand?
But I like my cards. Why do I have to take this?
Can't I just keep all the cards?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
except keep the pudding. And it's like, what with the pudding? I don't even know the pudding.
And I think they did something really smart because, I mean, we have the tin that it used to come in.
Yep.
And now mm-hmm. it's just this, like, peg-hanging, like, thin cardboard box. I mean, you could put that thing in your pocket.
See, wow. we actually haven't seen a copy of Sushi Go in the cardboard box. I remember hearing that it was getting reboxed and the newer editions were not in the tin, but I actually haven't seen it out, which is interesting.
Go to Target.
Okay, they are at Target. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that one of y'all's local game stores, Target?
Yeah. Sadly, I've heard of this place before. We're like deeply emotionally crushed because Barnes & Noble's having so many problems because
Barnes & Noble really is our local game store.
Yeah, pretty much.
We do game nights there and everything.
Our Barnes & Noble over here about a year ago, their selection became so good. And when I started seeing that Barnes & Noble was having issues, I was like, man, please don't take away the good games from here, because so many people are not willing to go to the local game store, mm-hmm. but they'll stumble upon games at Barnes & Noble.
Right. Yeah, that's why we started a partnership with Barnes & Noble, the one in our area, because it's like a concept store, so they're open to a lot of new stuff.
Very cool.
So we do like a monthly family game night at the Barnes & Noble. And they've sold games because we've showed games to people.
Because
so.
We've been there playing them and showing people how to play
them. So I really like the kind of stuff that they're trying to do, and I hope that this whole issue that they're going through right now doesn't completely torpedo the company.
It's true.
And we'll see. Yeah.
Hashtag not a sponsor.
They're not. I wish they were. They've got deeper pockets than I do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not anymore.
But actually, it's a little funny that you guys say Sushi Go, because my number. What are we on?
My number one.
My number one game is another drafting game. It is Ancestry, which we have completely fallen in love with over the last 2 or 3 months. Yes, it's another one that you're going to have to spell weird to look up, just so you know.
Rick, it's the word ancestry, but just take off the Y and put EE at the end of it. That's it.
Oh, I am so ahead of you guys already. Like, I'm checking out BGG just
as in a tree.
Yeah.
Because you're building a family tree.
Boom.
It makes so much sense.
We actually saw this at Moxie, which is our local game store. We saw this on the shelf. I think they had two copies over there. I showed it to Aaron. I was like, you know, the Smiths have talked about this game and they love it.
Well, you're right. We don't particularly care for the art.
The art is the worst part of the game.
But that's okay, because the game is fantastic. And we just make fun of the art the whole time we play, because the people look really weird. But
is it all these people that are like, hey, let's make sure they all look like different cultures? Is that what I'm seeing right now?
Yeah. I mean, you could probably make an argument that it's a little bit racist-ish. But I
think they were trying to be very inclusive, and it was like, I think you guys went all the way back around to kind of not great.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's just been a fantastic game to play. From the very first time I played it, which was at PAX Unplugged at the Calliope Games booth, I was just like, how is this game so easy to get into and so fun? Building a family tree was not a theme that really grabbed me. But it's just so great. You draft the tiles, you're building your family tree, and you're only ever comparing to your neighbors on your left and your right. So it scales really well from two players all the way up to six players, and feels pretty similar at any of those player counts.
That's awesome. I didn't know it was six players. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. And, I mean, the game plays so fast. Like, think about how fast Sushi Go plays, right? So this is a similar kind of drafting game. The game plays so fast that we played it a couple times. We got the game, and we took it out. We have a New Year's Eve game night with another couple that we're friends with, and we just send all their kids and all our kids to the basement and let them, you know, hit each other and stuff, and we play board games until you know, we dial in at 11:57 and say Happy New Year and go back to playing more games.
And then we send all the children to bed, and then we go playing.
But what happened with this game was we sat down to play it, and we played like one or two rounds. You know that furtive kind of playing where you're like, oh, we're figuring this game out. And then we kind of stopped and we started talking about different kinds of strategy because in the game you get points for the coins that are on the cards. You get points for the your generation. So if you have a longer dynasty than your neighbors, you get points and they don't. But then at the end of the game, all the marriages that you have will give you like multiplier points too.
Yeah, it's and so there's a big multiplier.
There's enough different stuff in there where it's like, okay, well, I'm going to try this strategy, but the game moves so quickly that it's not like you're like, I don't know if I want to commit to this strategy for 2 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I can commit to this strategy for 15 minutes.
Yeah. And we were just like, oh, I want to try it a different way. Oh, you know what? I want to try something else. Let's play again. Oh, okay. Sure. And like the next thing we knew, 3 hours had gone by and we played this game the whole time. Like, it was crazy.
That's really cool. That's awesome. We're definitely going to have to pick that one up then, I think, because I've heard you talk about it on the show, but I didn't know that it was more of a filler game and moved so quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's much like my earlier suggestion, Pyramix, it's a bigger box, but it's definitely a filler game. No question.
I mean, you could maybe call it a super filler game, I guess, if you really wanted to.
Sure.
Just because
super filler.
Behold the super filler.
Well, I mean, you're trying to have enough tiles in there so that each player, up to six players, can have 15 tiles in their family tree, but you're picking from a hand of six, so what is it? It's, you know, it's 120 something tiles.
Yeah.
In the
they got to go somewhere.
Plus the scoring.
Yeah.
Plus the scoring stuff. So it's got to fit somewhere.
That's cool. Very cool. Our number one game is Deep Sea Adventure. This is probably one of the games that we play the most of. And it's a game that Rick and I actually, it was on my Amazon wish list for a long time. And then Rick and I stayed up at a game convention in Atlanta. Aaron and the kids went upstairs and went to bed at the hotel, and me and Rick were like, listen, we're going to play some Deep Sea Adventure. We were up till 2:30, I think, Rick, and we called it the friend ending
game.
Some hour of silliness, yes.
Yeah. So this one, Aaron, why don't you tell us a little about what Deep Sea Adventure is?
I actually bought this for Ryan for Father's Day after that experience he had with Rick playing it, and then I fell in love with it. I love this game, and I love introducing it to new people. But you're all deep sea divers, and you're trying to make it to the bottom of the ocean to collect treasure. But what I love about it is your action, the turn that you take, affects everybody else. So if you pick up treasure, you're depleting all the other players' oxygen each time. And so only have so much oxygen, you know, to make it back up into the ship. And so it really is the friend ending game, because you get mad at the other person for taking more treasure and taking everybody's oxygen. So it's a lot of fun.
It was really funny when we played this with you guys, when Sarah and I came over. It had been a while since Ryan and I played the first time. And so that had been the last time I had played, but like Ryan and Aaron we picked up treasure like our first stop, and you guys were like, you're really going to pick up the treasure now? I was like, yeah, is that a problem? You guys are all going to kill us. Like, it became like this expert deep sea diver thing.
I introduced my mom to this game, and she's like, well, why can't I make it to the bottom of the ocean? And I'm like, Mom, you really can't. You're going to die. And there have been a few people who we had this argument with. They're like, no, I can make it to the bottom. And then we turn around really quickly. Yeah. And they're like, really? You're turning around now? But then we get out and they don't.
The game is extremely deceptive, because you look at this and you're like, all I have to do is roll the dice and walk down this little path, pick up some stuff along the way. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm trying to give you a warning. And if you try to get to the bottom, you're going to die. And then people don't listen and then they die.
Yes.
And so what's good is Deep Sea Adventure plays over the course of 3 rounds. And each time as the treasure is taken out of the ocean, the line of treasure comes up and it kind of like sucks up toward, it becomes shorter. The line of treasure becomes shorter. So by the third round, the very valuable treasure is not that far away. Yeah. And so you can make it to the bottom of the ocean in that third round. It's just it's a little bit of a waiting game and it's a little bit of it's definitely pressure luck. But I think it's because of its portability, because it's such a small box, it plays it on any surface you can think of. We've played it at the beach.
Oh, yeah.
We've played it at on a small iron table at a coffee shop. We've played it on the floor. We've played it all over the place. And it goes into Aaron's purse anytime we have a date night, or it plays 2 to 6, kind of like Ancestry. Like, it plays really well at any player count.
Mm-hmm. It would definitely fall into that super filler game category. Ryan and I actually had a little... difference of opinion when we were discussing this earlier. I was a little offended that he said that it was a filler game. And
yeah,
he said, well, it fits in 30 minutes. And I was like, no, it can stand on its own.
So it sounds like you need to have a conversation with Jason Katarski of Green Couch Games. Yes. They're the filler game masters.
Exactly.
They pride in making filler games. So that's funny.
Yeah.
So since you've been talking about that, I have added it to my Amazon wish list, and Anitra has added it to her Board Game Geek wish list.
Nice. So, nice.
It's a fun one.
So the only one left is my number one. My number one, I would absolutely say, would fall into the category of a super filler game.
Definitely a super filler.
Super
filler.
And that is Magic Maze.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys played Magic Maze? Please tell me you've played Magic Maze.
I have not. Oh. It's been on my wish list, and when it, I think... Think Geek was doing a sale and it was down to $14, but it was just after Christmas. And I was like, I can't spend money after Christmas.
Oh, man. Totally worth that. Okay. $14. Wow. That's wow. So the premise of this game is that you, it's a little bit difficult to, it's a mouthful to explain everything all at once so that it makes sense. There's a wizard and a rogue and a barbarian and a warrior. Dwarf?
Something. I don't
Something.
Know.
Anyway, and they're in a shopping mall, and they're trying to steal stuff.
They lost all their weapons, and so they're trying to steal new ones.
Great.
As one does.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So the way the game works is... So the thing that makes this a filler game is that there's different scenarios, and the scenarios will play out in about 5 minutes. And so you could play one scenario and then play that one again, or, you know, play one and then play scenario two, scenario three. But there's about 25 of these large square tiles, and they're numbered 1 through 25. And then, like, so scenario one only has the first 10 tiles in it.
Something like that.
And then scenario two adds the next two. And so there's, as the first, like, 10 or so scenarios build up, they're actually adding rules to the game, so it gets progressively more complicated, which is awesome. It makes it a lot more fun, and you really feel like you're progressing through it. But the thing about this game that is so cool is that no matter how many players there are, and it goes from 1 to 8 players, there's all these sort of like role assignment tiles. They're like job assignment tiles. Mm-hmm. And they're not like you control the barbarian or you control the rogue or you control the wizard. They are you move characters north or you perform the search action or you perform the portal action or you perform the escalator action. And so what's happening over the course of the game is you have to move these 4 colored pawns onto the 4 icons that represent the weapons or whatever of each of the different classes that they need to steal. Mm-hmm. And they have to be on those icons, all 4 of them at the same time. And then that kind of marks a shift in the game. And then after that, everybody has to get to the exit. In the first round, everybody gets to the same exit. In every subsequent round, everybody's got their own exits.
Their own colored exits.
So there's a timer going down. And everybody's kind of reaching in and performing their action. Right. So if all you have is move things north, it doesn't matter if that guy needs to go east. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. You can only reach in to move things north. And the tricky thing about this is you're not allowed to talk. So
that would could make it a little complicated. Yeah,
it's a cooperative game where you're not allowed.
To talk to each other. But there is a big red pawn.
Oh man. It's called the do something pawn.
It's the do something pawn. And if somebody needs to do something, you pick up the pawn and you're supposed to place it in front of them to let them know that they have to do something.
This is not how it actually works.
It is never placed in front of anybody. It is slammed in front of people.
Multiple times, usually.
It's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. the game is just like super, super fun because... there are times, there's certain icons on the board where there's a sand timer, and if you move a character onto that, you can flip the sand timer over. So if you're getting close to no time left, you got to get somebody to a sand timer, and if you're the only person who notices that the sand timer is about to run out,
man.
There's really no reasonable way to communicate, hey guys, the sand timer is going to run out. All you have is this pawn, and you can just like binary number one in front of somebody, like,
do you ever smack the do something pawn next to the sand timer and almost like, look over here, idiot?
Well, you're kind of not supposed to do that.
Look what I accidentally bumped on the way over.
It's like, move the sand timer from this location to that location, or the do something pawn, you know, you're not really supposed to do any of those things, but they totally happen. But it's just, I mean, it gets kind of crazy, and it's just super fun. And like I said, rounds can last, you know, 5 minutes, which in my mind makes that a filler game.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
That is my number one filler. I love that game.
You could definitely just sit down, play one round of it, and then go do something else.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, Magic Maze has been on our wish list for a little while, and so it's definitely going to have to happen this year. So.
Highly recommend. Good stuff.
Yes. Should we just call podcasting like money spending fortune telling? Like, is that really what we should call what we're doing?
They're the same thing, like, aren't they, Rick?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just get poorer as I sit here. Like,
I think every time we podcast, one of us backs a Kickstarter or buys something off of Amazon. Every time we do a show, it's like, we can't keep doing this.
Yeah, I know. It's like, is our hobby playing board games or talking about how awesome board games are?
That's true. That's true.
Or is our hobby buying board games and then they sit on the shelf?
Yeah.
Yes. My hobby is board game storage.
Accurate.
Actually, that would be, that's a business idea right now, okay? I'm patenting this once we hang up. But that's an idea. Starting a board game storage unit, you get to play the games that other people store at your house because nobody's playing all their games. I just looked over at my shelf. I've got two games unopened. They're just sitting there. They've been sitting there for like a month. What am I doing? You know, I should just open up a whole room of my house and say, store your board games here. Completely free. Just allow me to play them.
I'll play them for you. I mean, that sounds like I see no problem.
Like, we know you're busy. It's like the personal board game assistant. We know you're busy. We'll play your games for you.
Exactly. We'll tell you if you want or not.
And we'll also sell like wallpaper that makes it look like you have a big board game collection without having to buy it. So you just put it up in your room, in your gaming room, and it's like, look at my collection. Woo-hoo.
That's true.
Well, if you have a dedicated gaming room, then you could just put up like a live stream, like an always on camera.
Yeah.
It's only in the game room, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they can fawn over their collection and they can think they're cool by association because somebody else was able to buy Charterstone and they weren't. And so they're like, oh, my game is right next to Charterstone. That's awesome, right? Or look at how beautiful the Grim Forest is, blah, blah, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then they also get to see the game that's being played when the game is being played.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I like it. Sounds
good.
We need
to start this business quickly.
Or what we do is make it public to everyone, you know, via podcast.
Exactly.
All right. I think that's about it. We talked about lots of awesome, awesome filler games on this episode. Mm-hmm. Where can people find One Board Family and all of you guys on the social medias and all the various internet places?
Rick, you want to run it down for us?
I always get it wrong, but I'll try again.
I know.
One Board Family. So we're oneboardfamily.com is our hub for the everything. You can find our One Board podcast wherever you find podcasts. We're on Instagram, One Board Family. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/OneBoardFamily. We've got a YouTube channel that is, you just do a search for One Board Family and you'll find it. So yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid us if you're looking for us.
That's true. That's true. The Googles have found us.
Mm. Yes.
The Googles.
Beware the Googles.
So thank you, man. Thank you guys so much for having us on. And I know that this was, we're going to have you guys on the One Board podcast, very shortly. And so I'm very grateful to be in a hobby and be a part of a, I guess, a network of people that encourage each other and do cool stuff like podcasts together. So thank you guys, Smith family, for having us on.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. White/Gutowski family for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. We had a great time.
Yeah.
We always love having people on the show because it's always super fun, and you guys did not disappoint. So there you go.
Cool. Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yes.
All right.
A little bit of housekeeping on our end. To all of our listeners, there's still a little bit of time left to take our survey.
Yeah, Ryan took the survey. So what are you guys waiting for?
Yes, take the survey. Come on, it's man. Not that hard. Come on, people.
Take the survey.
5 minutes, man, and you might win a game from our collection. Come on. What, you got nothing to lose. And you tell us what we're doing good and what we should do differently.
Right. So where can they get the survey?
Thefamilygamers.com/survey.
Pretty easy, I think, to find that. You can also go to thefamilygamers.com, check out all the news and reviews and stuff that we list on the on the site. There actually is Mr. Gutowski, an ancestry review on there, if you'd like to read what we think about
nice.
It.
Nice. We might check that out tonight. Thanks.
You can find us on social media everywhere as at FamilyGamersAA, so mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yep.
All of those things. You can check out our Facebook community at thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right over there. And that's a great place where you can share whatever games you've been playing with your kids and maybe just with other family members and stuff like that. Or I guess they don't have to be family, but we are the Family Gamers. So.
Yeah. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast subscription source you use. Tell your friends about the Family Gamers podcast, and please leave a review of the show at Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe.
It's pretty shocking how important those are. I don't think people realize how important those are. I bet you Ryan and Aaron and Rick realize how important those reviews are.
Yes, please, and thank you. And subscribe to stuff. Yes, please.
Yeah. Well, every week when I say this, it makes me go, there's a couple of podcasts I listen to that I haven't given reviews yet. I should do that.
We should do that. It's, so,
yeah, you absolutely. Feel like a hypocrite it's when really you say weird. It every week, and then you're like, oh, man, I've never rated or reviewed this podcast.
Right. Yeah, we're terrible. We're terrible.
Hey, you ready for a continued plug? I just took the survey while you were talking about the survey.
There you go. What? Come on. Go. Come on. It's Come pretty on. Easy. All right.
That's right.
All right, guys. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? Any final thoughts?
No, I think we're good. This was fun. Thank you, guys.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. So I guess that's going to be it for us this week. Until next week, play games with your kids.